Welcome, everybody, to Pharmacy Pathways. I'm really excited for our guest today because not only is she a PharmD, so a doctor of pharmacy, she has decided that she wanted to go back and get her PhD, so to become a doctor of philosophy in the study of clinical pharmacology and the focus of pharmacometrics. So not only is she going to talk to us about what exactly clinical pharmacology is and pharmacometrics, but she's also going to give us some insight in who's in that space, how can pharmacists enter in that space, how does it contribute to healthcare and pharmacy management. And then she's also going to spend time talking to us about what a PhD program looks like. How does that differ from a PharmD program? Why would one choose one over the other? So I'm so excited for everything that you have for us today. And without further ado, I introduce to you Dr. M. Fonabasi Ete.
Thank you for having me.
I'm happy you're here. Okay, girl. So let's start with a brief intro of who you are. And it's so funny because we had one rotation together.
Yeah.
At the FDA in our last year of school, at pharmacy school.
Yeah.
And we went to different schools. And we just stayed connected. We linked on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
And now here we are.
Won't he do it?
Yes, he will. So let's, if you could please give it like a brief intro about yourself, where you're from, what you're currently doing, and yeah.
Sure. So I'm from Boston, but funny enough, I was originally born here while my father was working at the FDA. And you could probably tell by my name during the introduction, I'm ethnically Nigerian. So I always kind of joke that I was destined to get a doctorate because Nigerians have a 2-degree minimum. But I messed around and got 2. So here we are.
You don't have an undergraduate degree?
I do.
So
I do.
3 then. You're about to have 3. You passed the minimum.
I made it.
And you're not in DC anymore right now.
No, not right now. I am finishing up my Doctor of Philosophy, so PhD candidate at the University of Buffalo. And then after that, depending on where I end up career-wise, we'll move from there. But yeah.
Okay. Awesome. So can you talk to us about what exactly clinical pharmacology is and also pharmacometrics, because clinical pharmacology can be like a large umbrella name.
Yes.
So can you give us some insight on exactly what that entails and then how pharmacometrics fits into that picture?
Excuse me. Sure. So clinical pharmacology, I like to describe it as drug action along with disease pathophysiology and strictly within humans. That's where the clinical part comes in. And so it has basically anything and everything having to do with drug action in the human body and human populations. Pharmacometrics is usually defined as the science of quantitative clinical pharmacology. So basically anything that you can measure, that's where the metric part comes in. So whether, you know, it's a marker of drug action that is can be measured like as a quantitative test, like when you think about TDM or therapeutic drug monitoring or, you know, other ways in which you might measure markers of like disease progression, you know, any type of tests that you could run to give you a quantitative measure. Pharmacometrics deals with the modeling of those things. So how can we predict from the data we have to kind of theorize what the outcomes will be later on? So that is basically clinical pharmacology and pharmacometrics in a nutshell.
And how does that fit into, it sounds like behind the scenes work, right?
So yeah.
There's this drug that gets approved to market and then doctors are referring it, patients are taking it. Where does clinical pharmacology fit into the large portion of healthcare. Like, what happens to healthcare if people in this niche do not exist and are not doing what they do?
Well, for one, right, the 12th section of every package insert, you can take that out, because that's usually your clinical pharmacology. That's the section. That's the section where you find the pharmacokinetics and pharmacodynamics. So all of that information about absorption, distribution, metabolism, excretion, you can remove that. So that's, if we don't have jobs, that's basically like our number one selling export is gone. But also, what we're really big on is the dose finding. So determining the dose that's safe and efficacious, and also later on effective. We do a lot of work there. So that's where our major intersection would be with pharmacists and physicians and other people in the field.
So essentially, they wouldn't have any regulation. We wouldn't know.
Right.
Like you said, we wouldn't know what doses work or if they're safe.
Exactly.
And we wouldn't know how they're processed, how they're absorbed.
Right, right.
Okay. So we need you. Without you guys. Thank you. Without you guys, we would just be all over the place.
People exactly.
We'd be dying or not getting treated.
Okay. Right, right. There is the math to the madness. So that's what you kind of need us for.
Yeah, we do need you. So where, it sounds like that's happening at the lab, but where else are folks in this specialty operating? What settings in healthcare are these people working?
Sure. So clinical pharmacologists work in a variety of settings. So clinical pharmacologists, just as like their typical training background, are usually PhDs, so research scientists. They can be PharmDs, so pharmacists, and there are also physicians who work in clinical pharmacology. And so in that same way, there are clinical pharmacologists who work in hospitals, because you need to determine doses for drugs, whether it's like investigational or off-label, what have you. So they do work in hospitals. They also work in regulatory agencies. And then, of course, they also work in the pharmaceutical industry. So there are whole functional groups in pharmaceutical companies with the title of clinical pharmacology.
Are they also in the clinical trial process? Are they monitoring and giving guidance in the clinical trials?
So depending on the study design, so clinical pharmacologists are heavily involved in study design. That's one of their parts of the job description, is knowing what studies to conduct to give us the information that we need to answer certain clinical questions. It's one of our big things. So we're very involved in study design. As far as when the study is being conducted, it really does depend on the nature of the study. So, for instance, if you're doing a phase one study and you also need to understand the pharmacokinetics, so basically the fate of the drug in the body, what does the body do to the drug? Mm-hmm. You're also going to need the input from clinical pharmacologists on that, because you need to know for that pharmacokinetic study, what samples do you need? When do you need to be sampling? How many samples do you need? Like, is it going to be intensive for the patient, or, is 2-3 enough? And you'll get the information that you need to know, what you need to know about the drug. Like, especially, let's say, like, it's got a short half-life, clears out really fast. Okay, maybe I only need, like, 2 samples in 24 hours. Long half-life, maybe we'll proceed to collect more samples, so on and so forth. So those are just a few of the decisions that we're part of making.
You mean like serum samples, not patient population samples?
No, so both of those. Okay. So serum, in that particular example, we're talking about serum samples, but we also are looking at what patient populations need to be included when we're doing the study design.
Okay. Y'all are a big deal, man. So what personally drew you into this space? How did you even get exposed to this?
So I did mention that when I was born, I originally grew up here in the DMV area. So my father was working at the FDA, and he was the clinical pharmacologist. Well, and still is, actually. Let me not shortchange him that way. And so that was when I first got introduced. He took me to take your daughter. They had take your daughter to work day at 8 years old. And I was just really, like, intrigued by everything. Went to the meetings, got to sit in the office, and I was just like, I used to say all the time, kind of as a joke, since when I was a kid, like, oh, when I grow up, I'm going to be a clinical pharmacologist. And then it got to, like, straight out of high school, I was trying to figure out, like, my career path. And so my dad, he trained in Europe because at the time there were not very many degree granting institutions in the United States with the title clinical pharmacology. And when I was going from high school, there still were not degree granting institutions with that program, at least for like a first degree in undergrad. So the closest thing to pursue was pharmacy, and my mom's also a pharmacist. So I was like, okay, I'm gonna go to pharmacy school. And I went, and I was still, like, we took pharmacokinetics and biopharmaceutics, and I was still really intrigued by all of it. So now, like, it wasn't just something I was saying as a kid when I'm eight and I don't know anything about it. I'm, like, hands-on, working, learning the discipline, and I'm like, oh, I really enjoy this, and I'm actually, you know, kind of pretty good at it. So from there, I just started looking into what I needed to do to pursue clinical pharmacology as a career further.
And before, when we were talking, you shared that there's clinical fellowships. There's fellowships in clinical pharmacology now.
There are, yes, there are now.
In addition to PhD.
Yes. So things have really changed and progressed since my time when I was in school. I think there were only about... was it three when I was first looking to go either the fellowship route or the PhD route after my pharmacy education. And I really had to make like that critical decision as to which particular path of training that I wanted to pursue. I decided that I was going to pursue more structured training and go and get a PhD. Just because I didn't think at the time that since there were so few fellowships and they were new and the way that I learned, I thought a more structured program would be what would fit me better.
We're gonna circle back to that later, because I still want to dive a little bit deeper into clinical pharmacology. Because you mentioned several different settings that people can work in, and I'm interested to hear which setting are you leaning more towards?
So at the moment, I am leaning more towards working in a regulatory agency. Yeah.
And did you mention academia as well earlier, something that you can...
Yes. So you can work in academia within clinical pharmacology, and that's usually specifically for those who more are interested in the research side of it. And so if you are more research inclined, then you can pursue clinical pharmacology as an academician or a professor. And that way you kind of have, I guess, a lot more of the freedom and creative to control to pursue clinical pharmacology in the particular aspects that you're passionate about or interested in, whether it's a certain disease state or a certain drug or medication modality. Because right now, like, gene therapy is really huge. So, like, there are clinical pharmacologists who are solely focused on that, or, like, nanoparticle drugs or what have you. Like, so many different new modalities that we didn't have literally maybe even a decade ago. So there are a lot of people who are honing in on the research in clinical pharmacology there.
Dope. And so what would... So if you're research inclined, academia is good. And also if you want to educate,
yes,
that's a good niche. What about what inclinations would be better for regulatory versus pharmaceutical industry?
Sure. So regulatory, I think the big things that you have to keep in mind is that it's not just science, it's regulatory science. And so it's almost as if it's science, but also you're making policy or decisions that affect public. There's very large global, well, not necessarily global, because it depends on the regulatory agency that you belong to, but your decisions are affecting a large population of people. And so you are making this type of guidance or policy or what have you about general kind of safe and effective use of these medications. And so I think a lot of times, as opposed to academia, where you're research inclined, you have your creative ideas and things that you want to probe and test. From the regulatory perspective, these are a lot of times you're going to be evaluating what others have done in terms of like submissions from sponsors that could be like pharmaceutical industry or biotech startups, whoever basically is coming with a new drug application, let's say. And so you're going to be evaluating that. So that's where the regulatory part of the science comes in. So it's not just pursuing like your own science that you're interested in and like probing it all the way to make sure that it's meets the requirements and you know everything you want to know about the drug, but also it's the assessment piece that comes from that regulatory part of the science. So I think I would say if you're interested in not only practicing science but also evaluating, then regulatory is a good path.
And with those who are working for pharmaceutical companies, what are they doing, that's different than the academia and the regulatory?
Sure. So part of the biggest thing I would say with the pharmaceutical companies is that you have a vested interest, right, in your compound. So the drug or medication that you're working on from the pharmaceutical industry standpoint, you're trying to make sure, excuse me, that you are able to produce the drug that does what it needs to do in a safe and effective manner. And that is going to look different for each drug. We do the best we can. A lot of times we have targeted therapies now, so we can mitigate side effects, but we haven't been able to completely eliminate adverse effects. So from the pharmaceutical industry standpoint, you're going to be looking at, okay, what is this drug doing? But also, okay, do we need to have a study and see like, okay, what is causing this adverse effect? You're going to need to answer like all those clinical questions. And so basically, to compare it to kind of the regulatory, they're going to pose a lot of questions based on like the data that you bring and assessing how your drug that you're putting forward seems to work. And so on from the pharmaceutical industry side, you're going to answer all those questions and you're going to do your best to have collected the correct data that is able to answer that question and also show that your drug works and does what it's supposed to do in the intended disease.
Girl, that's a lot.
We
Y'all are smart.
try. We try. We're little people.
Earlier you mentioned that in this space there's PhDs, but there's also PharmDs, and then there's physicians. So what would, if you can go get your PharmD and then hop right into the space, what is the incentive for pursuing the PhD in addition to that? Or even, and maybe I can ask this as a separate question, can you just go from undergrad to PhD and not get your PharmD? So if you could share a little bit about what is the benefit or the competitive edge of the PharmD and a PhD versus just the PhD alone or the PharmD alone.
Sure. So I think it is very possible to go straight from undergrad to PhD. I think that it's a different pathway, of course, just because you're coming from an undergrad, so you're probably going to have a pure science bachelor's degree, and then you pursue, your doctorate of philosophy and an even more sort of like niche pure science degree. And so it's usually they are coming strictly from like the academic, research intensive kind of standpoint. And so you're bringing really sound, really excellent critical scientific knowledge to the process. And so you have a really good understanding of, the drug, how it works, or like the niche parts of the physiology or biology of disease, where the drug works. So like all that granular information, right? That's what you're gonna be honing in on when you go from like strictly undergrad to PhD. I will say I really valued my pharmacy training because it came with that clinical experience. So I wasn't strictly always focused on, okay, like this is the granularity of the science and like, this works really well. But it helped me kind of, for lack of a better term, I guess, consider real life because I had that experience and I knew that, like, okay, when I'm dose optimizing, I am not going to make something 12.7 milligrams because I know that's a pain for anybody who's, working in central to measure out and be able to give to the patient. I mean, obviously, when you think about it from just like industry perspective and you say, like, oh, the capsule's 12.7 milligrams, the machine does everything for you, so it doesn't seem like a big deal. But for me, like, that's something that I consider having that clinical experience. And then also just like knowing what would be tolerable. Like a lot of times you don't have that frame of reference if you come just from undergrad into PhD. So you're like, oh, okay, like this causes hand-foot syndrome. There are other drugs approved that cause hand-foot syndrome. So like let's keep going. But it's like, maybe not. Like maybe let's optimize the compound and let's see that we can make it a little bit more specific, a little bit more targeted so that we're not having this off-target adverse effect that, yes, of course, there are ways that we can premedicate the drug to mitigate that, but like if we don't need to see those adverse effects or toxicities, then why should we? And so then the other thing would be, okay, if I have the clinical experience from my PharmD, then do I necessarily need to get a PhD? And I would say, like, it definitely depends on what exactly you're trying to get out of your degree or what you want to accomplish within Clin Pharm. I remember when I was looking to find the path for myself, I looked at everybody kind of, in the executive suites within clinical pharmacology in industry, and I saw that, mostly all of them had PhDs, and some of them were PharmD PhDs. It's changed a lot more now. Like people are able to move up. There's more upward mobility, and so you will see PharmDs in those types of positions. But at the time when I was applying and looking for what I wanted to do, it was a bit few and far between. So I said, okay, it seems like I need some more training to really pursue this degree and get to where I want to be, and be able to get what I want out of my career. So that was part of why I went back to school. I also had this like curious itch that I needed to scratch, and I thought, okay, maybe a more research intensive degree would be the way to do that.
Thank you for sharing that. You're teaching me, by the way, because this is clinical pharmacology is a term that we learn in PharmD classes. I also took pharmacokinetics. It's so nice to hear someone was motivated to pursue it further because I was like, I just wanted to finish. So That's amazing. It's I think you've given people really good things to consider. And what advice would you give them for if they're considering, well, okay, so this is the information that I have. What things should they really be considering before they make these big choices? Things like financial decisions, right?
Because right.
PharmD programs, you are spending
exactly
money, and I believe most PhD programs you get grants or funding.
Yes, yeah, so PhD programs, a lot of them are fully funded, whether that be through graduate assistantship, teacher's assistantship, or research assistantship. So the good thing about it was I signed up to learn and I got paid for it. Now, it wasn't, you know, a pharmacist pay or anything, but at least like I signed up to learn and I got paid for it. So for me, it made sense because I was like, okay, I want to learn this. I want to, you know, get this expertise. Mm-hmm. But also after PharmD, which is the cost intensive program, I wasn't in the position to say, okay, like I'm going to go and shell out X amount of dollars for this degree, which is also partially why I didn't do a master's. I also considered maybe getting just a master's in pharmacometrics because it was something that was gaining traction at the time. Certain schools that had the PhD were also opening up admissions to the master's programs. I think it just depends on what your needs are. Like for instance, the institution that I attended, a lot of people who already have jobs within the pharmaceutical industry come back and get their master's, and it works for them because, you know, you can do it fully online, you can go part-time, it's only 2 years, and cost might not be a factor that they have to consider. So I think that there's a lot of different factors, cost being, you know, a very big one of them, and also in terms of getting a PhD versus going to a clinical pharmacology fellowship or a master's. I think you have to think about what it is you're looking to learn, how you learn, and how you're going to use this knowledge later on. I think for me, I wanted to develop the skills in research because I knew that clinical pharmacology, a lot of it is making decisions, and so I wanted the confidence to be an independent scientist, and so I thought that that skill would really help propel me in my career, so mm-hmm. I chose the PhD path, but I don't think it's compulsory if you wanted to pursue ClinPharm. I think it's something that if you really feel like this is something that you're really curious and passionate about learning more, mm-hmm. then it's something that you should explore. But we'll probably get to a later PhD. It's not for the faint of heart. So this is not an advertisement for it by any means.
But I think they are very interested in learning what the going into the a little bit more deeper what you experience in a PhD and how it really differs. But in order for them to hear that, they're gonna have to listen to the second part of this interview.
Okay.
So this is all that y'all are getting right now, and you'll have to see us next week. Thank you for tuning in.
Thank you.